and welcome to Astrology for Artists, The Art of Living. My name is Eric Francis, your astrologer, artist in residence, here to share some of my observations about what I'm calling the self-creative process. Not all about crayons and pastels and woodless pencils, but rather what that represents as a kind of an externalized inner trip. How do we bring that out in the world and kind of see ourselves reflected in that which create, and then let it create us back, it being an extension of self. You have a good chart for understanding that all art and all media are essentially extensions of oneself in a very intimate and personal way. One of the reasons I can say that is because if we start with Capricorn as the point of reference, that being either your sun rising or moon sign, and I would also speak to anyone with strong components of their chart in Capricorn, in particular parents, by the way, note that any children, and if there's young people listening, born in the late 80s and early 90s, have extraordinary Capricorn charts due to the Uranus-Neptune conjunction that basically changed the entire world in that era. So if we start with Capricorn, we arrive at Taurus on the fifth place, the fifth house. I use this very simple technique of just counting signs, counting them as houses, and that's how I read in this method, and it's a coherent and consistent method. And what it says is, first of all, that your creative process must be earthy, like you, and that additionally, it is easy for you to have a creative process be a mental phenomenon more than a physical one. There's something about Taurus that is distinctly physical. I mean, it is the first earth sign. It is connected with agriculture and eating and comfort. And yet, I think that the physical reality of Taurus is so all-consuming that it is easy to mentalize the process and make it kind of a plan, in a way. You'll hear a lot of Taurians talk like this, and I'm confident enough to kid with Taurians in writing and in person about thinking about something. You know, I have a friend, Raphael, who's a quite gifted Taurus musician, but he's always telling me pretty much what he's thinking about. And I think that it's vital for you to stop thinking about things, and even stop thinking about them, and get your hands in the clay and see what you learn about yourself with your hands in the clay, with your fingers in the paints, with whatever turns you on, with your hands on the musical instrument, and listen to the sounds that you make more than evaluating them. All of the earth signs, speaking of, have a streak of perfectionism to them. And there is a point beyond which perfectionism no longer improves anything. It only makes them worse. In particular, if it stifles your full flow of creative expression, which means expression. And so if you're judging your own performance or want it to be a certain way or have a preconceived idea of what the result is going to be, wherein you don't allow room for exploration and experimentation and for happy accidents that take you away from your original plan, it's not going to be easy. And so I suggest that you cultivate a kind of looseness about what you're doing and an experimental idea, remembering that ultimately, because Taurus is involved and we are talking about something that is inwardly intimate, that you are experimenting with yourself. And this defies the Capricorn nature to plan and to manage and to strategize and to control. And it can be frustrating to encounter the inherent experimental quality of anything that is genuinely self-creative, and have that run into the planner, the manager, the controller, the parent, the critic. Because then, first of all, it's very difficult to just let yourself hang loose and see what comes out. And the idea here is cultivating a kind of ease of what, you know, what you experiment with, what comes out, what you become in the process of making something. And I'm suggesting something that may seem a bit radical, which is that, for example, in the process of throwing a cup on a potter's wheel and then, you know, baking it and taking it out and glazing it and baking it again, that all of that is about you. There's something about yourself that you are experimenting with in the process of using these materials. And in terms of what materials I'm talking about, it would necessarily need to be the form of earth, because all of this stuff is ultimately of the earth, that you identify with the most. And that makes it even more personal and more inwardly intimate. And so therefore, it's going to take some courage to get involved in a process of basically sculpting yourself and externalizing what for you may be something that seems like it is much more naturally safer to have as a veiled process rather than as an external process. But that's art. The whole point of touching a thing, you know, rather than sitting in meditation and experiencing any or all of your feelings or reaching for kind of inner peace and light and beauty, is that there is a very wide diversity of experiences that you have in that process of self-creation through earthy materials. Like, for example, you left a bubble in your beautiful cup and the cup explodes in the kiln. That's, you know, frustrating and reveals the fragility, the frailty of the whole journey, of the whole process. The other bit about Taurus is that, for diversity of reasons, one of which is its inherent perfectionism, which, by the way, runs through the earth signs in a distinct way that is almost impossible to tell apart among the earth signs, which would include Virgo, which is a very important player in your chart right now and is getting a lot of activity. I mean, Virgo is the Venus is retrograde in Leo and Mars is on its way in, but boy, Virgo is happening. And so for you, all of the earth signs are directly involved in this. And one of the things about Taurus in particular, though, is its reticence to begin. It's very difficult. Taurus is the hardest sign, in my experience, to get started. But once it is started, it is the fully stoked locomotive. It is the stampede. And so it may be good that it takes it a little time to get going, takes you a little time to get that creative thing going, because once you do, the risk you take is that of total devotion. And you may sense this and have the idea that if you really get your self-creative process going, there's no knowing where you'll go nor where you'll ever stop. And this defies the structured need for predictability and the need to organize and organize time that is so inherent in Capricorn. So basically, what I'm saying here is that to fully embrace your self-creative process, to you it may feel like needing to totally let go of the outcome. And that may well be true. And that would be a very good reason to invest yourself in actively self-creating yourself through materials, materials. And you are fascinated by materials, by the way. I mean, all of your creative attributes in your chart are under the influence of earth signs. And I would imagine that for you, any material, especially things like metal and wood, anything directly mined out of the ground or made from something mined out of the ground, is just plain interesting. All the different varieties of these substances that are stunning. I mean, we live in what I call the golden age of materials. I recognize, as well as anyone, that we do have an environmental problem, and that the acrylic paints I love so much are part of that problem. But I would contend they're actually a very small part of the problem, and are worth utilizing that small amount of substance, for example, given the thousands and thousands of tons of plastics that are probably produced every hour, that a few ounces of paint are well spent on evolving your human condition. So speaking of evolving your human condition, let's talk a bit about Saturn, because it's important to recognize that Saturn is changing signs, and when Saturn changes signs, your life changes castes. It changes colors, and your environment seems to change quickly and radically. And there are many Saturn transits that are more dependable agents of change even than those of Uranus and Pluto. And partly that is because in many ways Saturn, your ruling planet, is the bottom line of tangible physical reality. Pretty much everything else that is beyond Saturn, the planets beyond Saturn, including Chiron, which pierces inside the veil of Saturn, so Chiron gets at least partial credit for being immediately and imminently tangible. But everything else is telescope territory. It's altered state of mind, special instrument, extension requiring instrumentation to see it. Saturn is right with us, and it's the planet that represents all the basic boundaries, the basic principles of life and death, the basic principles of time and the passage of time. And this is your ruling planet, and it's one reason why Capricorns, I guess you might say, think the way that they think, is that this unusually influential planet that is beginning to verge on the impersonal. It's still a personal kind of thing, because everything we touch and live in has some connection to Saturn. Anyway, it's changing signs, and this represents a significant change in your environment. And I would say that, it has spent 2 years in Scorpio. And that began in late 2012, right around the time of 12/21/12, winter solstice 2012. Remember that famous thing? It's the sun ingressed Capricorn that fine day in 2012, along with the asteroid Juno, which represents a certain angle on relationships and also on social justice and what you might think of as social justice through relationships. But that was a big day, if for no other reason than it was so stoked up as being important. And you took a trip through Scorpio, which may have felt like having all of your feelings displayed and laying a lot on the line, and a certain kind of emotional and sexual vulnerability of having Saturn moving through Scorpio, your 11th place, a very public place. And at the same time, what you are likely to have done is to have made many steps toward carving out a space for yourself kind of building a shelter for your own individualism, but it's not a shelter that's a retreat. It's a shelter that's, in a sense, a public place, and creating what some people call a niche, that specific thing that you do or that you want to do. And yet the odd thing about this niche is that Scorpio is involved, and that's typically not something that people put on display in any positive way. It's one thing to display your envy and jealousy, but all of the positive, transformational, more accessible expressions of Scorpio can seem like, well, they're better left unspoken about. It's certainly the realm of taboo. And one thing to recognize about the way your chart is oriented is that you always have this taboo angle pointing out toward the public, Scorpio on the 11th, and that you would necessarily need to be close to people, friends with people with whom you could relate through the Scorpio realm. It's a kind of a conducting medium of your community and a conducting medium of your intimate friendships. And this is essential in your self-creative process, especially since Scorpio is a kind of a fermentation tank for so much change. And so this is an invitation to bring the most private aspects of yourself out into the public, something that you may cringe at, something that you might not feel like you could ever put that feeling onto canvas or photograph and then put that canvas or photograph on display. But that's pretty much what your chart is suggesting would feel the most natural. And by the way, look back over the past 2 years and see how you've done that and the ways in which you might have resisted doing that or been invited to do that and who might have showed up who invited you to do that. And the overarching message of this, I think, of Saturn in Scorpio in your 11th is about being comfortable with who you are, no matter how taboo that might be. Now, the sign change of Scorpio is going to take it into what may be the most introspective part of a chart. So there's a shift that's in the process of happening, kind of a sea change, where Saturn moving into Sagittarius, where it's going to be from September of 15 through late 17. So this is more than two more years Saturn will be in Sagittarius, and then it's going to enter Capricorn, for which Saturn in Sagittarius is a form of preparation. Saturn returning to the first of its two signs of rulership, they are Capricorn and Aquarius, and that will happen in late 2017. And before that happens, you are likely to be brought on one of the most interesting journeys into yourself that you've ever been on. If you go back about 28, 29 years and start to count the next couple of years forward, you would have a similar journey. But remember that at that time, assuming that you were on the planet at that time, you were younger. And now, if this is your second time of Saturn through Sagittarius, who knows, it might even be your third, you have the benefits and the, certain strength of maturity on one hand, and on the other hand, there is a tendency that many people have to get stuck in their ways, and so this may really challenge the, the part of you that wants to keep things very stable. And so the idea here is to learn about yourself on this introspective journey, and then I believe in the practice of art as self-creation, externalize, express, dramatize, and allow others into that process. Sagittarius itself is inherently a very expressive sign. You have it in the 12th house. And so what you may be confronted by is how much of what might be an expressive reality you internalize. And Saturn is coming through there and saying, okay, it's time to engage this completely. It may feel confrontational. You may feel like you are being brought deeper inside yourself than you've ever gone or necessarily want to go. Or you may feel like you're being squeezed out of your interior space and brought into an exterior universe where you get to have this experiment. But if we look at consciousness and the human journey through consciousness, and we temporarily let go of all of the typical dramas that exist and all these seeming differences between what is public and what is private, and our society's obsession with scandal and with privacy, which is... they're kind of two sides of one thing where we think, oh, we can keep this private. I'll join the Ashley Madison website. Life's short. Have an affair. And then the next thing you know, hackers are in. And we find out that there's actually 37 million files in Ashley Madison. It's only 300 million Americans. And let's assume that 100 million of them are children or geriatric, and that leaves 200 million. So at 37, close to 40, that's almost one in five people, one in five adults, pretty close to it, in the United States is in the Ashley Madison database. And now hackers have it. And so even in looking at these kind of harsh boundaries of inner and outer that we make, and oh, that's private, I would never say that, I'd never want anyone to know about that, I'm not going to put my name on Facebook, I'm not going to ever put a picture of myself on the internet, et cetera, et cetera. The truth is that all of these distinctions are false, and that inner and outer reality are intimately connected, so intimately connected as to be the same thing, mediated by a kind of translation process, and we might call that translation process art. And the best way to stop the translation process is to stop the creative process and to never externalize anything. A lot of ways to handle this. Emily Dickinson didn't publish her poems during her lifetime. When she died, in her dresser drawer were found a tall stack of bad poems, in her opinion, and a short stack of good poems, in her opinion. And so she knew that upon her death, these poems would be published. She was fully prepared for that. She understood that. But during her lifetime, she didn't want to do that. I believe she only left the house twice to be fitted for eyeglasses. That's an impressively few number of times to be fitted for eyeglasses for a person of letters who lived a while. So what I'm suggesting here is that inner and outer are functionally meaningless terms, and that your entire inner process is you, and your external process is you. It's all you, and you have the choice to accelerate your development, your self-knowledge, your self-awareness by engaging in self-creative process. And that is the role that art in any form plays in your life. I would imagine including the experience of the art of other people and the response that you have. But it is time to go past that, to really dive in to your own, what you might think of as alchemical state. Now, one other thing about Taurus, and I recognize that the Alice Bailey work on astrology is apocryphal, meaning that it's of questionable integrity to some people, but I evaluate ideas on their merit as they are shown to be workable, and I think one of the most brilliant things in all of esoteric astrology, and by the way, it could not hurt at all to read the chapters on Capricorn and Taurus. In that book, plenty will go over your head, goes over my head, but there's going to be stuff that gleams out. And one of the things that gleams out about Taurus is how Bailey describes Taurus as the blacksmith shop of the soul. We almost don't need to go any further in reading your chart to consider the beauty of that statement. But think of Taurus as your own private art studio. And in that art studio is a blacksmith shop. And in that blacksmith shop is Vulcan forging in his smoky metal smithy the soul, which is your soul. And it is an image of making things with materials. And so inherent in your chart, if we just take a brief visit to this odd and unusual work called Esoteric Astrology by Bailey, who says, well, Taurus is ruled by Venus in the traditional method of astrology, but in the esoteric method, Taurus is ruled by a non-existent planet, an archetype, an idea, and that idea is Vulcan, and Vulcan is the metalsmith of the soul, and that is your fifth house. And this simply, to me anyway, expresses how basic the use of and the experimentation with materials is to your growth and your development. This is your growth and development are not so much about ideas as they are about getting your hands on the stuff and lighting the fire and shoving the metal in and melting it and hammering at it and shaping it and sculpting it. And I would imagine that experimenting with any form of metal smithery would be incredibly liberating for you. And I don't just mean fun. I mean like might have the power to set you free in a way that you never quite thought you could be set free. Even if we look at the ninth house, another earth sign in your chart, which is the house of visions and self-visions and ideas and your religious thinking, which is undeniably important to Capricorn. You may think, oh, I'm not really religious. I wasn't really raised religiously, or yeah, my parents were Catholic, or my parents were Orthodox Jews, but I'm really not. I left the church. I'm not a Mormon anymore. Well, the thing is that there is something by this point in human history that is inherent in consciousness about religion, and that thing is what is co-opted by religion, by the way. That aspect of, you might think of it as the alchemical metaphysical realm, is co-opted by religion and turned into a product. But for you, even that realm must be tangible. It's Virgo on the ninth, what I call applied science. Virgo is the sign of applied science. It's one of the most important signs involving agriculture, and there is no better form of applied science than having food on the table. How do we get food on the table? Someone invented language and mathematics, and they fucking wrote it down so their kids would remember, and now you can eat lunch. You know, 5 to 10,000 years later, it works. There's mayonnaise. There's whatever, tofu loaf. So even at your most mystical, there is a pragmatic thing, and that thing is described by Virgo, by applied science, which is also a form of applied art. Now, this could go either way for you. This could go off and veer off in the direction of ideas and abstractions, or if you turn the process around and point everything toward the potter's wheel, toward the paints, toward the pencils, point things toward the chunk of metal or the spool of silver, you will basically distract yourself from that level of abstraction and fuse it with the physical material world. And if you haven't had the pleasure of this, if you haven't had the pleasure of being wholly swept away by this, I would invite you to find out how good that is. And you may need to give yourself time, and you may need to experiment, and you may need to try a little bit of everything. You may need to feel the relatively gentle experience of clay on a wheel, and you may need to feel the relatively violent experience of smashing metal with a hammer, and or rocks to go digging for minerals and seeing what that's like. But I would say that if the concept here of self-creation is the conversion of ideas into materials, of plans and thoughts and concepts and ideas of right and wrong into the grounded experience of hands-on. I think you'll be happy to do that. And much in Virgo, by the way, and ideas abounding and flowing. And you would seem to be in line for a kind of spiritual awakening right now. Jupiter's about to go into Virgo, and many planets in Virgo right now. Mercury is going to be there real soon, and Mars is going to be there real soon, and Venus will be back, and a lot of emphasis on this spiritual realm. But the Earth thing says, make it real in some way. Make it out of something that comes from the Earth. As I mentioned in a few signs and in the introduction, I am a student of Brian Eno, though I've never met him. I've taken him for many years as one of my art mentors ever since my third ever girlfriend back in like in 1983 turned me on to Brian Eno's music and said, play it over and over again. It will do things to your mind. She was right. And one of the things that Brian Eno does to me and to many people is puts us in contact with a core experimental aspect of our nature. Eno is a sun in Taurus person. He is an example of the unstoppable creative force. Eno's work is going to be influencing artists for centuries. He's got a lot of mojo going, and I'm working with these things called the Oblique Strategies cards, available from England. I will put a version of this, an electronic version, up on the resources page. But these are very nice to have in tangible form. They just arrived in my life last week. Someone in England acquired a copy for me from the Eno shop in London, and I've just pulled an oblique strategy card, which it's a 100-card divination deck. And Eno likes to use divination as part of his creative process, which I recommend because it takes you out of rationality, if only for a second, and then you're looking at this new idea and wondering, well, that's interesting. And the card I just drew, apropos of the use of earthen materials, says, destroy, bullet point, nothing, bullet point, the most important thing. I leave you with that, and I would remind you to check your sun, your moon, your rising, but you'll also have, I would imagine, equally beneficial results by just picking any one sign and listening to it. Reality is an organizational system that divide things into 12. People might say, how could this apply to 1/12 of the population? I design everything to apply to all 12ths of the population. And what is there really that divides things into 12 and says, oh, there's 12 varieties of this one thing? Pretty much only astrology. There's only one Harry Potter. There's only one, you know, whatever, most things. And what I'm doing here basically is reading the same chart over and over again from 12 different angles, and they all apply. So on that note, on these notes, I leave you. And thank you, and I will catch you at another time. Bye for now.